the heart of the matter. No matter how many times I see them, I don't know if they're still running them, but they always give me a chuckle, are those V8 commercials. You ever seen these things? One particular commercial I've seen recently has a woman that bent over a baby carriage waving a French fry in front of her, and I assume it's her daughter, I don't know. The woman is talking in a way most of us do to little children, you know, that kind of gibberish we do with kids. And suddenly the camera pulls up back behind the carriage and we see a little arm come up and swing and hit the woman across the face. The point being that instead of a French fry, she should have had a V8, you know, better nutrition. That theme is repeated in a restaurant where a waiter comes up to a customer and says, "Hey, you didn't eat your broccoli." And with one great or the great one is where a man is feeding veggies to his dog underneath the table. He doesn't want to eat them. And suddenly, the furry paw comes up from beneath the table and smacks him across the head. Just to snap us back to reality that we need to eat more sensibly. That's the point. It reminds us that when you miss your veggies, you are missing something vital to your health, aren't you? Well, recently, through the writing of John Eldridge, God has come up, reached out, and bopped me on the head. As I was reading his book, Wake Dead, wonderful book, by the way, I came across something so obvious, but so off my radar, that I missed it. Or at least hadn't really incorporated the truth into my life. Eldridge begins chapter 3 of his book by revealing something that I never knew before, about a story I thought I knew pretty well. L. Frank Baum, you ever heard of him? He's the one whose story was turned into a famous movie that was shown all around the world. It's a story about a young girl named Dorothy who lives in Kansas, who gets swept up in a tornado and lands in a new and very scary land. Yeah, you know it now, don't you? I'm talking about the Wizard of Oz. Dorothy and her little dog, Toto, undertake that harrowing journey to go and see the wizard with hope of finding a way home. And the journey, of course, if you remember the film or I've even read the book, follows her journey along that, what is that again? The yellow brick road. And they, as they're going along, they meet all kinds of new companions, don't they? First, they meet a scarecrow, a tin man, and finally, they meet the Cowardly Lion. It's the Tin Man I want to stop and talk about for a moment. Because the movie left out a crucial part from Baum's original story. The Tin Man in the written story was originally a real man who had been in love with a beautiful Munchkin maiden. It was his dream to marry his beloved, but he had to make enough money so he could buy a cottage in the woods so they could live. The Wicked Witch hated his love so much that she cast a spell on him which caused him to injure himself so that one by one his limbs had to be replaced with artificial ones made of tin. At first, this seemed like an advantage to the Tin Man because it allowed him to work with a lot more power and a lot more efficiency. He became like a machine. He was sure that with his new limbs, he was going to reach his goal, meaning his heartfelt goal, which, of course, was to make enough money to build that cottage in the woods and marry his beloved Munchkin girl. Then the Tin Man in the original novel goes on to tell Dorothy and the Scarecrow what happened next. I thought I had beaten the Wicked Witch, and I worked even harder, but little did I know how evil my enemy was. She thought of a new way to kill my love for my beloved Munchkin maiden, and made my axe slip once more and cut me through my body, splitting me into two halves. Once more, the tinner came to my aid and helped me to have a body made of tin, fastening my tin arms and legs and head to it by means of joints so that I could move around as well as ever. But alas, I had no heart. So I lost my love for the Munchkin girl, and I did not care whether I married her or not. My body shone so brightly in the sun that I was very proud of it. And it did not matter now if my axe slipped because it couldn't cut me. There was only one danger, that my joints might rust. But I kept an oil can in the cottage and took very great care to oil myself whenever I needed it. However, there came a day when I forgot to do this, being caught in a rainstorm. And before I thought of the danger, my joints had rusted, and I was left to stand here in the woods until you came to help me. It was a terrible thing to undergo, but during the year I stood there, I had time to think about the greatest loss I had ever known, the loss of my heart. While I was in love, I was the happiest man on earth, but no one can love who has no heart. And so I resolved to ask the Wizard of Oz to give me a new heart. If he does, I will go back to the Munchkin Maiden and marry her. But Dorothy and the Scarecrow had been greatly interested in the story of the Tin Woodsman, and now they knew why he was so anxious to get a heart. "All the same," said the Scarecrow, "I shall ask for brains instead of a heart, for a fool would not know what to do with a heart if he had one." "I will take the heart," said the Tin Man, "for brains do not make one happy, and happiness is the best thing in the world." You notice in Baum's story that the Tin Man, who was once a real man, and who was alive and in love, but after a series of blows, his humanity was reduced to efficiency. He had become sort of a machine, a hollow man. At first, he didn't even notice, because his condition made him an excellent woodsman, as any person who foregoes their heart for productivity soon discovers. Notice also that it was the wicked witch who brought this disaster upon him because of her hatred of his love. Baum's epic tale reminds us that the enemy knows how vital the heart is to us, even if we ourselves are blind to it. And the enemy will use all the forces at his disposal to disable or to deaden our hearts. By taking your heart, the enemy has essentially taken you. And you are crucial to the wonderful story God has written. You know, the enemy has been very effective in this strategy, because there are lots of people around this community, around this world, who are really tin people. We too have suffered a series of blows over time, and we too have decided to seize on efficiency and busyness and productivity as the life we now lead. For so many of us, we have become empty, hollow shells, longing to get our hearts back. The point that God was trying to get across to me, I think, is that the heart, not the mind, is central to everything. And the mere fact I needed to be reminded of this, or maybe we need to be reminded of this, shows how far we've fallen in life, in the life we are meant to live. What may surprise you, because it sure surprised me, is that the heart is a subject addressed more than anything else in Scripture. Did you know that? The Bible talks about the heart more than works, more than service, more than belief, more than obedience, more than money, even more than worship. Maybe God is trying to tell us something vital that we've forgotten. Maybe, as I stated earlier, God has been trying to smack us in the forehead to get his truth into us. Consider just a few passages. "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with your soul and all your strength." Jesus called that the greatest commandment. And notice which one came first. The heart. "Man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart." 1 Samuel 16, verse 7. "Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." Luke 12, 34. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. That's Proverbs 3, verse 5. Your word I have treasured in my heart that I may not sin against you. Psalm 119, verse 11. These people honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. Matthew 15, verse 8. All a man's ways seem right to him, but the Lord weighs the heart. Proverbs 21, verse 2. You get the picture? According to the scriptures, the heart can be troubled, it can be wounded, it can be grieved, it can be broken. Thankfully, it also says that the heart can be cheerful, it can be glad, it can be merry, it can be joyful, it can be rejoicing. The heart, the Bible says, can be divided. It can be wise or foolish. It can be steadfast, true, upright, stout, and valiant. It can be frightened, it can faint, it can be cowardly, it can melt like wax. The heart can be wandering and forgetful, dull, stubborn, proud, hardened, wicked, and perverse. According to Proverbs 4, verse 23, the heart is the wellspring of life within us, the very essence of our existence, the center of our being, the fount of our lives. Now think about your own life for a moment. Why in the world are so many people frustrated and bored with their jobs and their marriages and their recreation, and their volunteering, their relationships? Why do they dread Monday morning? Let's face it, their hearts aren't in it. How many things in our lives have we arrived at by listening to anything else rather than our hearts? Why do so many relationships fail? Because one or both partners no longer have the heart for making it work. Why are so many people depressed and discouraged? They've lost heart. Somewhere along the line, in a moment of carelessness or desperation, we give our hearts away, and now we can't get them back. The heart is what defines us. It's what determines our character, which is what Jesus states in our gospel lesson today. It's the reason he taught in parables. Stories, whether parables from the Bible or even secular myths like Lord of the Rings or The Wizard of Oz, speak not to the mind. Speak to the heart. The mind, it deals in facts, but the heart deals with what? Meaning. For example, the fact is your son or daughter is not home by 2 o'clock in the morning. That's a fact. That may be the fact, but the reason, the meaning of their lateness is of what's most important, right? The value. And that comes from the heart. People who live only from the mind, they come across as cold and distant, detached from life. Yes, they may be physically present, but so is a computer. Those who live in the mind, they don't shed a whole lot of tears. And maybe that's why they choose to live alone. It's their motive. And that's what Jesus is getting at, much of what he talks about in the scriptures. What is your motive? What rules your motive? Why did you remember your wedding anniversary? I should have said, why do you remember Valentine's Day? Is it because you love your spouse, or because if you forget, you're going to have to face the music? Why did you flatter your boss? Could it be your performance reviews coming up? Matthew 5, verse 20, Jesus says that we don't have any hope in heaven, none, if our righteousness does not pass the Pharisees. How can that be? Well, the Pharisees were pillars, weren't they, of religion. They were model citizens. They were sticklers for following the rules. But Jesus says they were hypocrites. They prayed to impress people, men. They prayed out loud and publicly so that they would look like very spiritual beings. They gave money away to impress people with their generosity. Their actions, it all looked good, but their motives were wrong. Their hearts, as the saying goes, were not in the right place. And a person's character is determined by their motive, and a motive is the matter of the heart. Scriptures also locate our conscience in the heart. Paul writes that even those who do not know God's law show that the requirements of the law are written on their hearts. Their consciences bear witness. That's why it's so dangerous to have our hearts hardened by silencing our consciences. And why the offer of forgiveness is such great news. To have our hearts sprinkled clean from an evil conscience. What nonsense we perpetrate, you and I, when we believe that the mind equals reason, that the heart equals emotion. We separate things like that. Solomon is remembered as one of the wisest men who ever lived. And you know what? It wasn't for the size of his brain. Rather, when God offered him anything in the world, do you remember this story? Solomon asked for a wise and discerning heart. Wow. The heart is where our deepest thinking takes place. The heart is where the vital things of life are stored. Do you remember in the Christmas story, the Nativity, Mary, after witnessing all these events, is said to what? Ponder them in her heart. It is your heart pondering deep things that keeps you up at night. If you fear heights, if no amount of reasoning is going to help get you to go out and bungee jump, right? And when asked why, you can't explain it other than it's your conviction that you just don't want to jump. Proverbs 23 verse 7, we have this truth. As a person thinketh in their heart, so is he. It is the thoughts and the intent of the heart that shapes a person's life. The Apostle Paul wrote, if you confess with your mouth Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. For it is with your heart that you believe and are justified. Wow. Therefore, you do not belong to God. You are not Christian at all until you engage your heart, until you believe with your heart. No wonder Jesus quotes Isaiah in our gospel lesson today. For the hearts of these people are hardened, and their ears cannot hear. They have closed their eyes, so their eyes cannot see, and their ears cannot hear, and their hearts cannot understand, and they cannot turn to me and let me heal them. If we learn nothing else as a fellowship, we must learn that what really matters is not our activity, our doctrine, our physical presence, but rather what really matters is our hearts. In Matthew 7:22-23, Jesus says, many will say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, did we not do all sorts of Christian things, some amazing things? Jesus will say, I never knew you. The point in our lives is not activity. It's not efficiency. It's intimacy with God. Just like in a marriage, you can take a course on anatomy or psychology, but it's not going to help you love your spouse anymore. Jeremiah wrote of God saying, you will find me when you seek me with all your heart. Are we as a church family seeking God with our hearts? This is vital because without the heart, we cannot love God. Without our hearts, we cannot have love at all. Without our hearts, we cannot find the work we were meant to do. In other words, without your heart, you cannot have abundant life. It is an offer of God to an abundant life, just as Ezekiel wrote, I will give you a new heart and put a new spirit in you. I will remove your heart of stone and give you a heart of flesh. And I will put my spirit in you and move you to follow my decrees and be careful to keep my laws. May it be so with us as God's family.